We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from 5-Star App Meditation Studio and Muse, the brain-sensing headband that gives you feedback on your meditation practice. I'm Patricia Karpus, co-founder of Meditation Studio and your host on Untangle, along with my co-host, Muse founder, Ariel Garten. I'm really excited to introduce today's guest, singer and songwriter, India Ari. India has sold over 3.3 million records in the U.S. and 10 million worldwide, and has won 4 Grammy Awards from her 21 nominations, including Best R&B Album. She's from a long line of preachers and musicians, so she's spiritual, poetic, and musical. Here's a quote I loved from her interview with Oprah. "For me, music is a spiritual work, and this journey has proven my theory that the vibration of words and music do matter in the shaping of consciousness and culture." At 19 years old, India began writing her own songs as catharsis, and she says music is still her most important outlet for all her thoughts, feelings, and emotions that are deep inside. She's released 5 albums in her 17 years on Motown Records. Her deepest desire is to live with a joyful heart and do what she loves while making a contribution to humanity. If you haven't heard her song, I Am Light, I hope you'll listen to it. It's one of my very favorites and fills me up with so much joy each time I hear it. Now, here's the beautiful India Ari. India Ari, I am so excited to have you on Untangle today. I've been looking forward to this for such a long time.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah.
And so, thank you for continuing to try to get me on.
Yay.
When we first started talking about it, I was completing my album. And so I had intentions of doing this call and then my album's out and I'm resting after 3 weeks on the road and I'm home.
Oh,
resting.
My goodness.
So if my voice is a little bit deep, it's because I've been using it a lot, but it's also just deep and regular life.
So you have a moment of free time, and I'm lucky that we were able to grab that.
Me too. I've listened to many episodes of Untangled, so I'm happy to be on.
Oh, great. So I wanted to start by giving our listeners a little snapshot into the life of India Ari, growing up in Denver and moving to Nashville. And I want to hear a little bit about your mom, who was also a singer. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit of your background?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you said my name exactly right. Because sometimes people say Ari and Irie and India Ari. You said it exactly right
with the accent.
It's a perfect place, yeah. And that is my birth name. My birth name is India Ari Simpson. So I didn't really have to make up a stage name. And I was born in Colorado. My father was a professional basketball player.
Wow.
So he played for the Denver Nuggets and the Denver Rockets. The Denver Rockets was the ABA and the Nuggets was the NBA. He played for several other teams, but because of the Denver Nuggets is why I was born in Denver. And then we moved to Atlanta when I was 12, and Atlanta had been my home base. And I went back and forth between my parents. I graduated from high school in Denver and went back and forth. But Atlanta's where my mom is. And I ended up going to Savannah College of Art and Design because my mother told me she would kill me if I didn't go to college. I was always a musician, but I went to college to be a visual artist because I got a portfolio scholarship for my jewelry making, which a lot of people don't know. And while I was there, I doubled down on my natural musical leanings because that's really all I did through high school as well.
Yeah.
Then I got burnt out and I didn't want to go to school for music. I didn't want to learn scales. And I just got burnt out because I literally did music from first grade to 12th grade.
Did you start with vocal and an instrument when you were in first grade, or what did you start with? And when did you fall in love with songwriting?
Well, my mother's side of the family is all musicians. So singers like to say that singers always sing. Like, we always sing because it's your body. You can be in the car, in the bathroom, in the kitchen. You always sing.
Mm.
And so I grew up around singers, especially my mother. And I just always sang. My mother wrote an original song for me to teach me the days of the week when I was in preschool.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, like, that's just singing was what we all did. My grandparents sang. My uncle, my mom had 7 siblings. Because everybody sang. So it's just what we did. But when I say first grade, I meant that I started studying on, like, that little flute called a recorder.
Yeah.
That's so I what played you that. Yes, but I was in recorder ensemble. Like, we played Baroque pieces for kids. Like, I was in the, I played all the different recorders, soprano, alto, tenor recorder. I stayed after school. We did little recordings. We did performances. Like, I played recorder. And then I started playing in the band at third grade. So I played woodwinds and brass and all that. And I started writing songs right after I graduated from high school, because I was always a writer. I won, like, awards through high school for my essays and stuff. And I didn't even try. I just had a natural gift for writing. I literally just would write. And teachers always thought it was really great. And I would always win awards and stuff. And then when I graduated high school, it started just feeling natural to put my love of writing and my love of music together, because I knew I wasn't going to go to school to a music college or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I just did it. And I had a lot on my heart. You know, by the time I was 18, 19, I was going through different things. And also, I watched my mother write songs my whole life. She would write songs and go to the studio. One of my earliest memories is being in the studio with my mom recording gospel songs that she wrote on toilet paper. I remember watching her write it because it just came to her real fast. So she wrote it on toilet paper. And then I was probably 3 or 4, but I remember being in the studio. And so it was natural for me to start writing songs at a certain point. When I started writing songs, I never wanted to do anything else. But after that, I went to college. And all my visual art projects were all about sound and how color went with sound. And my favorite artist was Stevie Wonder. Like, it wasn't Matisse or Van Gogh. So my mother let me leave school and said, you have 1 year to get this off the ground. And I was making my own money in 2 months.
Oh, my gosh.
Over 20 years ago.
I know. Such an incredible story over these last 20 years, too. When we spoke earlier, you mentioned to me that you did a lot of writing in journals. And that for you, sometimes writing songs is a little bit like therapy, which I think is so interesting. When you first started writing music.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. We talk about these often on Untangle. When we keep things bottled up inside, it can start to impact our health mentally, emotionally, and physically. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, whatever it is. If this sounds like you, and it's a bit of all of us, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule and needs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now over to Untangle.
And you said when you got out of college, especially, you know, you just poured your heart into your songs. What's the process for you of doing that? What's that intuitive inner heart of India that comes out?
You asked a lot of things. As you were asking that, my mind went to all these different places, things I would love to share. It's funny because I feel like now we're just getting ready to touch into anything that's like meditation in my life.
Yeah.
Because with songwriting, for a long time, it always felt like magic. Like, oh my God, I wrote a song. I hope I can do it again. Every time I'm like, am I ever going to be able to write another one? Because it just felt like, where did it come from? How did I do it? What was the formula? And can I do it again? And after about 10 years, 12 years into my career, I took a long 4-year hiatus. And actually, I thought I was going to retire. This is 2009. I thought I was going to retire. And instead of retiring, I got deeper in touch with myself. Mm-hmm. And through doing that, I brought what I've been having a meditation practice since I was about 26, 27. And I brought my meditation practice and my yoga practice and my songwriting practice all together. And I never have writer's block. I never have writer's block unless I don't do my practice. I call it my songversation practice.
Wow.
But right. So there's that part where I ground myself through stretching and meditating. And then I go into my work and I keep my table set up for work. So I ground myself really good and then just go right to my table and work.
Mm.
But then to answer your question about journaling, I started keeping a journal consistently a few years after I started writing songs consistently. And so I wanted to make that distinction because for me, songs were just natural. Like I told you, my mother wrote songs and we all sang, and I watched my mother write songs and go to the studio and make it into a recording. I've seen her do it many times.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was natural, but it wasn't natural for me to be able to exactly get everything in my own heart out. And so when I started journaling and writing songs, it was like a muscle in my heart was getting exercised, because in my journal, I had an African priest tell me to start keeping a journal because that was the only way to get. He told me my mind was like a hard drive and that in order to turn it off, that I needed to start journaling. And I started journaling that day, and I kind of journaled, and I also wrote songs, but it wasn't a practice the way it became until he said that. And I had a journal that was empty that one of my uncles had given me. And so I started writing in it that day. And I go through like 12, 18 journals a year. Like I write a lot and I like handwriting. And so when I started exercising that muscle of getting everything out of my head onto a paper in a place that I knew nobody had to hear, I didn't have to judge myself. I could say anything in my journal. It made me be able to do something like that in my songwriting too. And so that's how the two are interconnected. And then, like I told you, 10 years in my journaling, that real openness of myself inside of my journaling and bringing my meditation practice and my yoga practice all together made me the best songwriter, a better songwriter than I ever thought I could be.
Yeah, I want to get to that place because that to me is such a treasured time in your life. It's so beautiful. Yeah. Before we move on from the journaling, do you wake up in the morning and meditate and then write in your journal? Or do you sit down when you're beginning to work and then meditate and journal?
I wake up in the morning, meditate and journal, but also journal all day. I had a thought. Ooh, I have a song idea. Ooh, I have a line. Ooh, that was good. I just heard somebody say the other day, and sometimes it's regular things. Yesterday, I heard somebody say, I've been asking myself, what is a life well lived? And I was like, ooh, what is a life well lived? So I put that in my journal at the top of the page, just a question to ask myself later. So I do it all day, but I do wake up in the morning. And to me, journaling and meditating is one in the same often. I also have meditation practice that really is like sitting a certain way. And I have, because I practice TM too, and another type of meditation that we could talk about too. But I do all that too, but also literally, I don't know how to explain it better than this, but except for that, meditating and journaling are the same thing to me. You know, it can be. It quite often is the same thing. And so I wake up in the morning. Actually, I wake up in the morning and I pray first all the way, because that's just what I do. And then I meditate, which I call prayer, talking to God, and meditating, listening to God. Because one of my astrology teachers taught me that. I talk and I listen and I meditate and I journal and I stretch and I start my day.
So were you always inclined towards this mindful spirituality and contemplation? Or did you come to this after you said you, did you call it like a meltdown, like where you took your 4-year hiatus after?
call it a meltdown. I've called a lot of things.
Let's talk about that sort of pivot moment in your life. Like, was it after the Grammys and that kind of shock of things not going the way you had hoped it would, but then realizing that maybe that wasn't as important as you had originally thought? Or what was going through your mind at that time? And was it a really pivotal point in your life?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. So to answer your first question, I have always been spiritual minded. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, though, like my mother used to say, India is a star child. I didn't know what that meant. She's an adult looking at a kid, so she's seeing something.
Yeah.
And my mother's very spiritual. And she has like natural psychic abilities, but all the women in my, I feel like all people do, but all the women in my family had those real natural psychic abilities. And it wasn't a thing. They didn't take clients or anything like that. They just had it. And so my mother would say, she called me a star child. And at one point when I was 14, actually, this is a side note, my mother said, you're going to do something really important where you're able to really speak to people and teach people. And I was like, oh, well, okay. I was like 13 or 14. And at that time, I wouldn't even sing in front of anyone. I didn't sing in front of my mother when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. She had to sneak and hear me. So I didn't think I was going to be writing songs that could teach people things or any of that. But she said it. And so I kind of got a natural inclination from my mother. And even like I just referenced one of my favorite astrology teachers who I've been knowing since I was 19. My mom would read astrology books, but she was more casual with it. But I became more of a student in a lot of the areas that she was casual with. So even like I learned how to read reading astrology books. Mm. We had yoga books. I taught myself how to stand on my head and stuff like that because we had this whole shelf just full of all these metaphysical books and some like history and encyclopedias. But if you see a drawing of someone standing on their head and you're 9, you're going to try. And so I got it that way. But also there was a part of me where I always thought I was just an introvert. I had mature taste. It's like none of the kids in my life liked to listen to Stevie Wonder on vinyl. But Stevie Wonder is my musical hero. And I've been listening to his records since I was little, 5, 6, 7. I had my own record player at 7. And I would have Stevie Wonder records, and that's all I cared about at 7. Oh, wow. But I looked at that as having like mature taste or being an introvert. But when I got into my late teens, I realized that it was really a spiritual leaning. Those are the things that I love. I remember getting my first paycheck. I worked at a fabric store, which I got fired from. I worked at a fabric store, and at my first check, I just wanted to go to the bookstore and buy this astrology book that I loved. I just wanted this book. And I remember my mom looking at me like, oh, okay, that's what you want. Yes, take it to the bookstore. I need this astrology book. And so I was always like that. And then also, as I got older, it was very easy for me to, easy is not the right word. Like my first time sitting on the floor in meditation, like when I first started writing in the journal for real and really quieting my mind and really sitting in a quiet space, it felt like a relief. Mm. Like, this is what I like.
Did your mom do TM? Is that why you originally started your meditation practice using TM?
No, and I didn't start my meditation practice using TM, which actually is the second part of your question.
Good.
When I came into the music industry, it was 1999 when I signed my record deal. And by 2001 was my first year going to the Grammys. That year is the year I think you're referencing where I went, and to everyone's surprise, I got nominated for 7 Grammys. And then to everyone's surprise, I didn't win any. And it was like, that was an awakening about the politics of the music industry and a lot of the politics just around being human, like racism and sexism and colorism and all this stuff I didn't really know existed.
I mean, you had just signed and it was...
I was probably 27 that day at the Grammys.
But I mean, the idea that you signed your deal in 1999 and then 2 years later had 7 Grammy nominations is crazy.
And it was a lot and it was heavy and
it's a
all
lot
that
of pressure. Yeah.
But then there was the disappointment, because before that it was just pressure. Then there was the disappointment of learning how people really can be. Cause now I'm not looking at it like I'm becoming a product in a multinational corporation. I'm looking at it like, oh great, I get to put my music out, but really I became a product in a multinational corporation.
Right.
And over the years, those things wore on me, because the Grammys was just one example of that. And so when I went to the Grammys that first time, it was 2002. 2009 was when I took my 4-year hiatus.
Okay.
Because by then I was like, if this is how it's going to be, I'm done. Like, I'm not doing this. And I read somewhere, I still never remember where this book was. I have a feeling of what book it is, but I cannot exactly remember. but it was something that I bought at the Bodhi Tree in LA, which was my favorite thing to do whenever we went to LA. But there was a book I got from the Bodhi Tree. And in the book, the writer said, at any time you can say stop. Oh. And that was like the summer of 2009. And I was on this tour that I hated. And I was working with these people that I felt didn't have my best interest, but I had a commitment to this tour. So I finished the tour, and all that time on that tour, I was like, when the fall comes, I'm stopping. Mm. And that was the fall of 2009. And that began the hiatus, but that didn't begin my meditation practice, but it did begin a deepening of my commitment to myself.
Yeah. And I want to talk about those 4 years, because you said, I can stop and I'm going to stop. Did you feel unhappy? Did you feel unfulfilled? Even though, you know, a lot of people think when you're doing what you love, you will automatically be happy. Mm-hmm. But then there are so many other factors that come into play. Did you just feel like something wasn't right? You just didn't like how your life was going? When you stopped, did you intend to take a 4-year hiatus, or did you just not know what was going to come next?
I just didn't like the way things were going.
Yeah.
Because I like making music, but I don't like all the rest of this stuff. I don't like people saying, let's get the product out. This is not a product. This is my life's work. Like, right. I didn't like all of that.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. And when I did, it's so funny because I had never thought of it this way. And I don't know if you have had this experience, but I know it's a common experience. Have you ever been in any type of relationship? But in my mind right now, I'm thinking of a romantic relationship where you love the person and you don't end the relationship because you don't love them. You end it because you have nothing left. It's just like, there's nothing left to get. Like, you love them, but you don't like them anymore. It's that feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how it felt. I love my music.
Yeah.
But I didn't like any of everything else that went with it anymore. And it wasn't like, I'm going to be strong and go take care of myself. It was like, I'm empty. And so some people still go on E, and that's where people get into drugs and stuff like that, because they're just using artificial means to keep themselves going. But that's not my nature at all. And so I just stopped.
And then,
I didn't know it was going to be 4 years. And that was the first
time.
You know how they say, if you ask God for direction, be willing to move your feet.
Yes, I've heard that.
I love that saying. And one of the first times I ever said, okay, God, like, whatever with this music thing, just what your will be done. And I got chills when I said it, because I'm always like pushing. I want the music. I want it. I want to make this work. The first time I ever just let go was then. It was the fall of 2009, and I just let go. I was like, well, let's see what happens, because I'm not going to keep doing this. What was already happening, there was no way to keep going. So I just asked to be shown what to do, and it ended up being 4 years. A lot happened in that 4 years.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what happened in that 4 years, because you've always been a spiritual person, but your spirituality seems to take on a different life at different times in your life and to be expressed in different ways.
Yes, I'm a Libra. So I always have two answers to everything.
Because you talked about astrology, so I wanted to ask you when your birthday is.
Yeah, October 3rd. I have two answers, because there's one, and see, I'm a singer, so there's one thing that's stuck in my throat right now from a question you asked earlier. Because there's two answers to this. Again, like, you just asked me how it takes on different qualities at different times in my life. I wanted to go back, because you were right about something you said. That first year that I went to the Grammys and I had that shutout experience, that was when I started meditating, actually.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a friend, I was probably like, I guess like I said, maybe 26 or 27 by this time. And I had an older clairvoyant reader who became just like one of my best friends. He was in his 60s, I was in my 20s, but he became a really good friend of mine. I met him when I was probably 21 or something like that. And after the Grammys, I took my band and some of my friends to Jamaica. And there was a recording studio in Jamaica, and they gave me flights. And they said, you have this many tickets and you have also accommodation, so bring whoever you want. And so I invited my friend, the clairvoyant reader, too. And it was like a movie. Like, we were walking to the beach one day, and he said, your spirit guides told me to ask you what you want to learn. They said, it's time.
Oh.
Right. It was like a movie. I know. Oh, I know. I haven't thought about this in so long.
Okay.
And so I said, I want to know how to be in communication with my spirit guides and with my higher self. And he said, okay, that's what we're going to do. And we were there for maybe like a week and a half, and we did these meditations every day. And he called that style of meditation inner vision meditation.
Okay.
And so that's what I started learning. And that is the type of meditation I would do that would help me to get in touch with my truth so I could shut out the noise of everybody else. And a lot of it would come in symbolism. Like I would see symbolism to answer my questions, and the symbols were clear because they're my questions. It wasn't like abstract. It was like real clear symbolism, and I would write it down, and that's how I would navigate my life. And I remember telling him at that time, I said, I feel like I'm flying blind. And he said, your guides are saying there's a way to see and you have a natural inclination. And so we started doing these meditation classes for, I mean, it was very, class is a more formal word, but classes.
Yeah.
And so I would see him a few times a month or a few times a year, and we would practice this inner vision meditation technique. And that's really what I do in the morning.
You talked about prayer, meditation, journaling. And I'm wondering in this process of inner vision work, if you're asking for answers somehow, or so what's actually happening in your meditation?
For me, what happened, the parameters are you sit in a chair with your feet flat, make sure no part of your body is crossed, and you breathe to ground yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, he taught me to breathe up through the chakra system.
Okay.
But I think that was more of just giving you some parameters of how to connect your body and your breath. I start to just feel relaxed. And because I've been doing it for so long, just sitting and breathing. And then it becomes like sense memory, really. Mm-hmm. You sit and you breathe. And also, he likes it to be dark. But you know, in Jamaica, we were outside at the beach and it wasn't dark. But he likes it to be dark. And it's not as much as like, I have a question, let me go in here. It's more like when I get really relaxed and my higher self or whatever I want to consider the energies that's talking to me, I just call it my higher self. When I start to communicate with myself, I don't even know how to phrase that. But when I start to communicate with myself, it's like the question and the answers come at the same time. It's like, oh, right, right. It's like, this is what you know. Oh, right. Question, right. It's, I don't know how to say that better than that.
Yeah.
And so, and sometimes I found like, I was maybe like 3 years or 5 years into that practice, and I would feel antsy. Like I would be in my house and just like walking in circles, like going to the kitchen and out of the kitchen and in the kitchen and out of the kitchen and running around the living room. I'm like, what am I doing? And it'll be like, ooh, my body wants to sit down. Or I'll just feel like an antsy feeling inside, like something feels weird, like an expectant energy or something. And I'll be like, ah, my body wants to sit down. And so I would sometimes get into meditation that way. And so it wouldn't be like something was on my mind. It would be my body would make me want to sit. And I would sit into my inner vision meditation, and the question and the answer would come at the same time. In recent years, like, because my, I call him my godfather for lack of better words, but he would talk about a spiritual shift that happens when you're in your late 30s, where your guides are not as present with you. They are like, okay, we taught you. Let's see what you're going to do. That's how he sees it. I'm not stating this as fact, but that's his philosophy.
Right.
And I remember when I got into my late 30s, it really felt like, okay, I'm out here by myself, and it felt different. And so in when I got into my late 30s, and that's the time of this 2009 hiatus we were talking about.
Right.
It really, I would really go in with questions like, what's going on with my skin? Why do I feel, where should I be living? I would go in with questions, but that's not really how it always is. But because I have like a drastic life shift and like spiritual shift, I started going in with questions. And that's also when I started doing TM, and that was on a whim. I was like, oh, they got TM classes out here. I want to go do it. It was just like that.
How do you decide whether you're going to do inner vision meditation or TM, or do you do both?
Oh, that's funny. I feel like in this last 4 years, I've been doing both. And to me, it's so funny. I don't know what I do these days. And actually, what we were talking about that I call my songversation practice, that actually is all of it. Because to me, TM is a way to just calm down.
Right.
And then once I'm calm, I use music in an intentional way to bring myself even more grounded. And then I'll go into an inner vision meditation that'll just give me some answers like, do this today, do that, call this person, or this is a song title. Like my dreams come back to me sometimes in my inner vision meditation. Things I thought about the day before, like song titles or lines, like I told you, A Life Well Lived came to me the other day. It'll come back in my inner vision meditation, and I stretch, and then I go to my table and do my work for the day. And sometimes the work is calls. Sometimes it's called and writing. Sometimes it's journaling long time. Sometimes it's writing an essay, like, but because I can just consider myself a writer, and that's always a setup for my writing.
Yeah.
So really, that's what I do. And now you're, this is my first time ever really realizing that I don't do them separate anymore. I do inner vision and TM, and I'm my stretching, and I call that my songversation practice.
It's so great. And you said earlier on, like, even as a young girl, you had this intuitive sense of understanding yourself and others. You also said that your mind was always going. And I think that happens mm-hmm. for a lot of us that turn to meditation. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I love that you've been able to channel all of that energy into such beautiful music and the kind of music that you're creating. I mean, where do these themes come from? Like, I am light. Like, I love this. Like, these words from I Am Light. I am not the things my family did. I am not the voices in my head. I am not the pieces of the brokenness inside. I am light. And every word in that song is just a word to hang on to. It's just so beautiful. And where does all of that come from?
I'm loving this conversation because I'm learning a lot about myself. I told you, like, I just come from a natural spiritual family.
Right,
but
right.
That part that you're describing, that part of me and the spiritual aspect of that comes out in my songwriting, that's the part that surprises all of my family and my mom and everyone. Because that is distinctly mm-hmm. me. And my mother wrote political songs. They were more political. And mm-hmm. she also wrote gospel songs. My songs are more decidedly spiritual with a little bit of a political energy.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that comes from asking. Mm-hmm. Like, I would say, I remember for me, the ideal as a songwriter was that I could ask God what he wants his people to hear and let it come through me. Not just me, but I could be a person too who could speak to humanity and just say, you know, why not? And in the beginning too, it felt like mm-hmm. an ideal. And I like, just maybe if I ask God, mm-hmm. what his people want to hear. I don't even refer to God as he, but you know, maybe yeah. if I ask God what the people need to hear, it'll come through me. And I don't even know if he's even real. To this day, I don't even know if it's real. I just know that that's my practice. I go, okay, what do we all need? Mm-hmm. What's going to speak? What speaks to me? Because really, I write all songs for me first.
Right.
But I have a complete understanding that we're all interconnected. So when I'm singing to myself, I'm singing to anyone else who ever felt like me.
Yeah.
And so I ask.
Well, I mean, it just, I have this question that I wrote down about how have your personal struggles influenced your music? And now,
a word from our sponsor, Happy Mammoth. This is the company that created the amazing supplement, Hormone Harmony, and they are dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients like herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors, especially those chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. They're offering our listeners 15% off the first order at happymammoth.com using the promo code UNTANGLE. So if you're tired of hot flashes, night sweats, low moods, poor sleep, you get the drill. The things that put your life on hold, you will want to check them out. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com with the code UNTANGLE at checkout. That's happymammoth.com with the code UNTANGLE. Now, on to Untangle.
Now I'm thinking maybe that's not such a good question. For me, when I'm writing, I'm a better writer when I'm heartbroken or mm-hmm. triggered by something. Or there's mm-hmm. when I'm just like everything's fine, I cannot mm-hmm. find a way to be really creative. And so I feel like some of the best materials come from this deep well of sadness. Or what is that place for you?
I think that is a perfectly valid question when you said how your personal struggles informed your music, because I wouldn't call it personal struggles, but I would say my personal struggle, because we all have that part of our life that is a human part over mm-hmm. here in the human realm is about contrast and it's just what it is.
Yeah.
And I don't ever feel like everything's always okay. I have right. times when I feel better than others and I have a natural depth that is never full. And that creates a certain type of sadness in and of itself.
Yes. Wait, so say that again. You have a natural depth. So
it's funny. I've never said that, but I had one of my favorite philosophers in the world is a pastor named T.D. Jakes, because I just love the way he sees life. But he said something like that to me.
Yeah.
And it made me see myself. And I said something like that. I have a naturally deep well
mm-hmm.
that is never full. And that is a natural type of sadness.
Oh my gosh. I just
right.
love the way that you said that. And so it's such a gift that you can create so much yeah. from that natural depth. I mean, one yeah. of the things that you said, I think this was on your website, you use your life experience to break down, break through, break the shell, elevate and fly to being yeah. worthy of a better life. Do you feel like because of your natural depth, you're more sensitive, more open? Maybe it's more sensitive, but maybe it's also just more open to all of these things that yeah. we're talking about.
I think those things are synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
That depth is a sensitivity and it is an openness. And it's funny, the breakdown, breakthrough, break the shell, elevate and fly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It came from understanding that I finally came to that life is about cycles. Mm-hmm. And so I always thought that something was wrong because I did have a natural sadness or a natural oversensitivity. I always thought that there was something wrong, that was a, I don't know the right word, that was a burden or a problem. Mm-hmm. Problem right. is the best word. I always mm-hmm. felt like that was a problem. But what I learned is that, because we talked about that 2009 era for me and we called it a meltdown and I laughed. I said, you can call it a lot of things
right.
because like for me, that was a breakdown, but breakdowns for me are always followed by breakthroughs. Mm-hmm. And when I think about why I call it break the shell after that, because break the shell for me means that's when you're starting to go, okay, what am I going to do though with this feeling?
Mm-hmm.
And then elevate for me is action. Mm-hmm. So like the song, I Am Light, you said like every word hits right there.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine everything that I lived and all the pain and stuff that I felt to be able to put it that simple. Because like the second verse says, I'm not the mistakes that I have made or any right. of the things that caused me pain.
Ugh.
I am not the pieces of the dreams I left behind. That's saying a lot.
It's saying so much. Oh my
God.
So
it's a lot of living to make a really simple song. And to me, that's what it means to go from breakdown to fly. It's mm-hmm. just living the cycle of your life. And fly doesn't last forever. We all, you know, your wings get tired, you land again, something else happens, but what do you turn it into?
Yeah.
And so for me, I think my music comes from a desire to take my depth and my sadness and my natural sensitivity and turn it into something. And it just so happens that I'm blessed to be able to love music, because it could be anything else. I would be a jewelry maker if I were not a musician.
Mm.
Could easily, because it's my second love.
Right.
And that would probably be having the same messages, but music makes it so much more able to be widely shared.
And how do you feel when you finish a song? When you finish that song, did you know that you had created like a gift to the world? You get like sometimes a hit of the value that's about to be released.
No, because I've been around enough to know like it doesn't matter if I think that or not, because mm-hmm. it's going to turn out how it's going to turn out.
Right.
But also going back to the song versation practice, really what that is about for me is getting myself grounded and relaxed enough that I allow my music to emerge instead of trying to make it come out. And when I'm relaxed and it's coming and it's flowing from me and emerging from me on its own, I'm not even thinking about if people are going to like it, because I'm way too in the process. When mm-hmm. if I am in the beginning thinking, I want to write something people are going to like, if I do it in the beginning, which is kind of the only place I can do it,
mm-hmm.
when I'm trying to write something I think people will like, nothing ever gets done. It doesn't come out. It gets all stuck and weird. And I get up from my chair and walk around and turn on the TV and start doing something else. But when I'm grounded and I'm in my spiritual practice as a songwriter, I don't even have desire or room to think, what are people going to think? Because that's really the thing that keeps the songs from coming. And then once it's done, it was, for me, songwriting is truly a spiritual practice. So once it's done, I don't go, ooh, that's good. I go, thank you. Especially with the song, I Am Light, I know when I like something.
Yeah.
When I know when I've achieved my goal, or, you know, when it's fully done, like, I'm like, okay, I can get it. It's funny because mm-hmm. it's almost like waking up twice. Like I go into that space and then I'm like, the light in the room looks different. I go, okay, I'm done. But it'll be like 4 or 5 hours that I'm writing or focused on something. Then I come out of it and I don't come out and go, oh, they're going to like this. I come out and go, oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a song. I wrote another one. Yes, thank you. But part of my songversation practice is prayer, like I say.
Right.
And so I do ask for things, but I don't know if getting it is up to how the universe moves. But I remember writing the song, I Am Light, because it was 12, 12, 12. And I was like, why not try to write something special today? Like, it was like that. And I remember saying, because I pray really specific prayers for my songs. And so yeah. I remember saying that I wanted to be something that would really administer to people's pain, and that people who really understood what it felt like to hurt would be able to hear a healing in this song. And I said a lot of things. And to me, that's a big thing to ask for, because that's a big thing to ask for. I mean, I don't ask knowing that it will be gift granted me, but I ask because I believe in prayer. And that's the closest I get to thinking about how anyone would receive it. But no. Because so many times I thought I had wonderful things and was completely overlooked in the commercial sense. Right. But who knows how people take things when they're in their houses? And I never will know. I don't get to see that. And so I just humbled myself to trust that somebody's listening.
And when you wrote the song Strength, Courage, and Wisdom, which is like so much here comes from this deep well that you're talking about, or from your connectedness with people in the universe and your practice. And what was the inspiration for that?
It made me laugh when you said that, because through you asking that question, I'm able to remember that that was one of the first songs I wrote that I freestyled the whole thing into a recorder. I didn't sit down and think about the words, and I freestyled it into a tape recorder. But the thing that makes me laugh about that is there must have been some way that I got relaxed enough to let that happen. But I was probably 23 or 2 or something like that when I wrote that song. And I was a long way off from learning how to manage my spiritual energies. A long way.
Interesting.
It's about like 10, 15 years away at that time, you know? So there must have been something that was just right, that I could just let it emerge from me that day. I haven't done that a lot, where songs come like just a freestyle. It doesn't happen a lot. Mm-hmm. It happens on occasion. But the closest I get to that feeling of just letting it flow out is the process I keep describing when I ground myself first.
Yeah.
But Strength, Courage, and Wisdom just came all out. And I was like, I'm so glad I recorded that, because I don't know what I just said. And it was like an old school tape recorder, like a tape recorder.
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of our meditation teachers on our meditation studio app will just come into the studio and I'll give them a topic and it will come through them. And then there are plenty of people that come in with their scripts that they've worked really hard on. But I find it so interesting that you can create music or create meditations and have them just kind of come through you. It's a very spiritual connection. I want to ask you something about I Am Not My Hair. Tell us a little bit about that.
Here goes my Libra part again. Just to answer the thing you just said.
Yeah.
For me, the ideal is that it can just come through you.
Right.
That's the ideal for me.
Yeah.
Because then when it comes through you, it doesn't rely on your wisdom. You can say so much more. And that's what I love. I'm Not My Hair came when I first came out. I had dreadlocks that I started growing in high school. So they were pretty long. And I was like one of the few artists who were in the I think they were like reggae artists, of course, who had dreadlocks. But in the American music industry, in the R&B or soul music, nobody had locks like that. But I did. So it was a signature of mine. And then I just started feeling it was time for them to go, which I had heard through people that that would happen. I couldn't imagine that being the case. I was very attached to them. But I just started feeling it. And I was like, I just want it off. And in hindsight, I realized my life was really changing and like the hair had to go too. And so I cut my hair and I would be like out in the world and people would look at me weird and talk to me different and treat me different. And then I went to the Caribbean where locks are from. That's what I would say. I feel like the Caribbean is, well, maybe Africa too, but the Caribbean is known for people with dreadlocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there and I had braids because I had gotten like these really tiny micro braids down to my butt, which I wore my hair like that in high school. So I did that again.
So cool.
And I was doing a performance and the audience was like real quiet. And I was like, what are they doing? I couldn't, they were just really quiet. The energy felt real quiet. Something inside of me spoke and I was like, oh, they are like confused about my hair. And I had just written a song, I'm Not My Hair. I sang it. And by the end, they were singing it back to me.
Oh, wow.
Huh. Right. They were like, they sing the whole chorus. And they were like waving scarves and stuff in the air. It was crazy because it was just me and my guitar. And they were like waving flags and stuff like I was playing with the loudest band ever. They had been smaller versions of that leading up to that moment, like just at the grocery store or doing some interviews. Like people would just treat me different.
Mm.
And so I wrote the song and then got to live out that marriage of process and product in the Caribbean that day. And then I had to do a lot of interviews where I had to explain to people that this song really is not about hair. But I didn't know, I didn't have the words, because it is about hair, but it's not. Because really the song is about dogmatic self-definition.
Right.
And the things that we think are what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have been learning and teaching other people, not about themselves. I didn't mean teaching them about themselves. I can't say what anybody learns from anything I offer, but teaching other people to see me past my external.
Yeah.
Because we live in a world that everything is all about how it looks, and especially in the music industry and entertainment and film world. And by writing that song, I freed myself to do, I could wear any kind of clothes, any kind of hair, anything, and nobody questioned me anymore after that, which I set myself free.
Yeah.
But I also set my own self free inside, because the moment I cut my hair, I was like, I look so pretty like this. The second I cut it.
Yeah.
Because nobody ever thinks you're going to look good bald. And I was bald when I first cut my hair. But now I cut it all the time. Every few years, I just be like, I want it off. I want that fresh feeling.
Yeah.
And I cut it and I can braid it. And now this last era, which is fun, I've been wearing like wigs, which I never did. And I'm having so much fun with it.
Oh, nice.
I had no idea how much it brings out a different part of me. Like I talk different and walk different. And it's, you know, it's been fun. It just came from cutting my hair.
Right.
So having it's to this, learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor for.
Yeah,
for
it's all. A metaphor for what we.
Yeah.
And you know, the really cool thing is Oprah said that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I learned I am not my hair like my friend India Ari said.
Yeah.
I'm like, ugh.
You're inspiring all of us. And I love that you have your mission to spread love, healing, peace, and joy through music and words. Yeah. I thought that was so well put. What is next for you? You've created so much magic. And will you keep going and creating more music? Or do you have something else in your vision?
Here I go again. Two answers.
Okay.
My mission statement, we were talking about the Grammys. That first year I went and with the 7 nominations, mm-hmm. I went back the next year, and being back that next year made me think, this is crazy. Like, I don't want to be pulled around by this thing. And that's the year I created my mission statement that day. Mm-hmm. The second year I went to the Grammys, it was spread love, healing, peace, and joy through the power of words and music, like you said. And because I wanted to remember my goal, not what other people told me I should want. Next for me is more of that, because it says the power of words and music. And as I mature, I want to do more writing. I've been writing a lot. I want to be able to publish things. And I would love to share my songversation practice with the wide. I've done it with friends in some experimental settings, and it has worked for everyone. And I want to be able to share that in a wider sense.
I want to do that practice. I want you
to.
I want you to teach me that songversation practice. I do think that there's a book in you, because, I mean, there's your story. I mean, even a memoir to tell your story and these discoveries that you've had along your journey. It's such a beautiful story and it's such a wonderful journey. So I can't wait for the book.
I want to get that first book out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's funny. I'm middle-aged now. Which I literally the other day, I was like, I'm middle-aged. I just didn't realize it. Because there is that thing that people say about fame, like the year you become a celebrity, you kind of get stuck there. Yeah, I think it's true. And like, there are a lot of ways that I define myself based on who I was at 25 and didn't really know.
Yeah.
And then of course, life naturally calls you forward. And so like, I had health stuff that was not as scary as I thought it was, but it was scary for a minute there.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, like relationship stuff. I almost got married very recently, all kind of stuff. Like life just grows you up, and it started making me realize who I am today.
Mm.
And I'm 43. And so like, somebody could call it middle age.
I don't think that's actually middle age, just saying.
Like, people say 50.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, I guess people say 50, but I'm not 33.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's a very distinct energetic difference that I feel. So I'm glad you don't call it middle age, but something like that. Because I don't exactly feel middle-aged either, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I feel more mature in a very distinct way. I feel it. And for me, when I was younger, I always thought, I want to write someday. I want to publish someday. I want to share these things I write someday. Mm-hmm. And now the age I am feels like someday. And now I look at it like, I want to get this first book out, because I want the second half of my life to be a lot more about writing and publishing. I want to still always do music, but I want to write and publish and teach.
Yes.
Even with music, even songwriting mixed with my songversation. I just want to teach and share and write and publish
and
share the wisdom I've gained. I pay my dues.
I mean, I think all of us are going to be at the edge of our seat just waiting for everything new that you're going to create. And also, I think there's a new song. I just came up with a new song for you to do.
What is it?
Called I Am Not My Age.
I say that in the song, I'm like, I'm not my age. I'm not my race. I'm not the skin on the outside.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can
keep on cooking. You're doing amazing things. And I'm so, a gift to be able to talk to you today. And
thank you.
Oh my gosh, I'm just like.
Oh my goodness. I have to say also. But also what's next this year is I have an album out called Worthy.
Oh, right. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I'm very proud of it.
Yeah. Tell us about that that's coming out.
It just came out February 15th.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and it's called Worthy, which is, you know, as a writer and a lover of words, every few years, a word will just stick with me. For a long time, my favorite word was resilient.
Right.
A long time. Yeah. This recent era has been Worthy.
Well, I think in the Oprah interview, she asked you a question. Didn't she say something like unworthiness?
Yeah.
Did she say unworthiness is your calling card or her calling card?
Mine. She asked me how long had, because we were talking about the Grammys and the shout out and how it made me feel. And she said, let me ask you this question. How long has unworthiness been your calling card?
Okay.
And it's Oprah. I mean, I'm assuming everybody loves Oprah like I do. I adore her. Mm-hmm, and I had my whole life when I was young, I watched the Oprah show as much as I could, like when I was young, 11 and 12 and 10. And so I had to give it some thought because it was her asking.
Right. And it's a big statement.
Yes, it is.
It's a big statement.
And what I realized though, is that a calling card is something you give to someone else. Because that's not how I feel. It's not how I felt. There were times when I felt low and I had to remember my self-worth and stuff, because life knocks you down.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's weird being a celebrity, because you hear people say all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. People say exactly what they think about you. You're a celebrity. You hear it. But as a whole, I never felt like an unworthy person.
Right.
But I realized how I could look like that to other people. And I was already loving the word worthy a couple years before she asked me this question. So when she asked me, it really struck me. And it made me double down on my love for the word. I knew I wanted to call my next album Worthy, so that became the title. And then as I created the songs, it became the theme of the album too. And so I'm proud of the songs. I was in a relationship for the 3 years that I was writing these songs. So there are a lot of love songs on here. But to me, these songs magnify how I feel someone should treat me. So even inside the love songs, there's a message of Worthy. And there's also a song called Worthy. I say the word Worthy in probably three songs or something. And so I'm proud of it, because also when I went into this project, I didn't know if I was going to make an album. I just thought, I make music, I'm going to do what I do, and we'll see where it goes, because making albums is not a given for me anymore.
Right.
Which 2009 taught me that.
Yeah.
And so it turned into an album that I adore.
Ooh.
So I'm very happy about it. Very. I adore it. I like even listen. I don't ever listen to my own music ever. It's not like a thing I do. I listen to I Am Light all the time, and that's it.
I know. I listen to
the song. Yeah, thank you. I listen to Worthy all the time. The song and the album, I've been playing it for 6 months. And every time I listen to it, I feel like I hit my mark closer than I ever had before with any of my previous bodies of work.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
I love it. Side note, because who said, you know, I like Oprah. We all established that.
Right.
I got to send her the album, and she said the song Worthy. She said this should be the national anthem.
Oh, no.
And I love that.
Thank you so much for everything. You are just, I'm going to say this again, you're just such a gift, and I'm so grateful for you just as a human being. You're just amazing. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me be on your podcast and for waiting so long and putting up with all my cancellations. I'm glad this turned out just like it did today. And also, thank you for such an interesting conversation, because I truly was able to put a lot of puzzle pieces together about my spiritual practice because of the questions you asked.
Thanks so much to India for being with us on Untangle. You can explore more of her work by checking out her website, soulbird.com. As always, if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at founders@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store and Muse at choosemuse.com. We'll see you next time.